Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, we'll tell you if the Cowboys are really back on track.
And if the Steelers even need Le'Veon Bell. That's ignorant. All right, we start today with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, I got Tom Brady. Tom Brady made me realize two things last night. Number one, he's the fourth head on my Mount Rushmore of sports alongside Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, and Babe Ruth. Number two, I don't want more than an athlete. I want my great athletes to be great athletes. I want them to entertain me the way Tom Brady has the last 18 years. I want them to create miracles on the field and on the court. I want them 100% committed to their sports. I want Michael Jordan, not LeBron James. Tom Brady is football's Michael Jordan. I realized that last night with 7 minutes to go in the game, the Chiefs and the Patriots, and Brady and the Patriots trailed 33-30. And we're facing third and one from their own 34-yard line. This was the play of the game. I expected the Patriots to hand the ball to one of their backs because the Chiefs' defense couldn't stop a runny nose last night. Instead, Brady dropped back to pass and unspooled a 42-yard bomb to Chris Hogan. The pass was so perfect that Hogan caught it even though there was a Chiefs defensive back hanging on his left arm. My mind was absolutely blown. Tom Brady is 41 and throwing the ball better than he did at 31. The Patriots went on to win the game because Brady is a more accurate passer than Patrick Mahomes, the league's next great superstar. Tom Brady is obsessed with athletic greatness. Virtually all of his energy, beyond family, goes into honing his athletic skills. He's an old man and still adjusting his throwing motion.
If you do that, you have torque. If you do this,
yeah,
you don't have any torque.
That's what I feel. So it's that.
Okay. All right.
I've got to be here. I just got to get this.
How easy is that? You see how relaxed you feel up here?
Yeah.
Money. Money. I don't know what that ball did, but that's a perfect delivery.
That's why Tom Brady is still the best player at such an advanced age. I wish every athlete followed the Jordan Brady model. Money ended the Muhammad Ali model. We keep longing for the modern Ali. We fail to see that the conditions that created Ali are no longer there. You need the military draft, the Vietnam War, legalized segregation, and athletes truly connected to the black community to create the next Muhammad Ali. What we have now in LeBron and others are small corporations connected to larger corporations with a primary function of generating revenue. Ali answered to a religious sect devoted to black empowerment. James answers to Nike and Hollywood enablers. More than that, money and pampering have disconnected most athletes from reality. When the world starts catering to you by the age of 10 or 12, and you're rich beyond your wildest dreams by age 21, you have more in common with Justin Bieber than Darnell Washington.
Man.
In 1990, the rapper Rakim popularized the saying, "It ain't where you're from, it's where you're at." I'd also add, it's how you got there. Playing fields can teach us many important life lessons, but when the fields are lined with gold, those lessons are often corrupted and diminished. Gold fertilizes greed, not character. White athletes don't carry the expectation of being more than an athlete. Tom Brady isn't producing or starring in talk shows centered around mediating rap beefs between Drake, Pusha T, and Kanye West. Brady hasn't launched a sports agency, made himself the face of a grade school, or thrown himself into presidential politics. Tom Brady is what LeBron once aspired to be, the greatest athlete of his era. Brady, not LeBron, stands alongside Ali, Jordan, and Ruth. All right, joining the desk now is NBA champion Dante Jones, former NFL great and future Hall of Famer Tony Gonzalez. Marcellus, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah.
Am I right that Tom Brady is the greatest athlete of this era, superior to LeBron James?
You're right in putting him in that world, in that realm of he is one of the greatest of this era, but you're wrong if you say and crown him as the king of this era when the king is still out there and balling at the level he is. Let's stay on the field. Let's stay on the court. Tom Brady, greatness. But the way that LeBron became great wasn't tied to the greatest coach of all time. The way that LeBron became great wasn't tied to him being a part of a system. And the way that LeBron became great distanced himself from even the number two of his generation on the court versus a Tom Brady who still has his skeptics that say, is he even the greatest quarterback of this generation when I hear a Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers' name come to the conversation? So if you look at it on the court, on the field, the gap between LeBron and number two and Brady and number two is far greater with LeBron. But let's go one level deeper off the court, off the field. LeBron's brand. It's amazing that you made this mistake of confusing a smaller brand as being more laser-focused. And that's what Tom Brady looks like to you in perception. He's more focused. He does have TB12. Don't forget about TB12. It's a smaller brand compared to the King, who's coming out with his 16th edition with a lifetime contract with Nike. A smaller brand doesn't mean you're more focused on football. It means that you are not as great and as grand as the other guy who's been doing this, as well as his greatness on the court. So for me, LeBron trumps Tom Brady. Mm.
Dante, before you go, I just want to... Before you... The man's got five titles in the hardest sport to play. He plays the hardest position in sports. The distance between him and Peyton Manning just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger every time Brady lines up to play, as it did last night. So the distance between Brady and all of his contemporaries, including Drew Brees, any of them, Aaron Rodgers, five titles. Aaron Rodgers has one. And then the other, that partnering with the coach, that is one of LeBron's weaknesses and one of Tom Brady's strengths. He don't even like Bill Belichick, but he's still making it work. That's what makes him even greater. Dante, I know you want to jump in.
The two greats on your Mount Rushmore did it the same way LeBron James is doing. They set the tone. Michael Jordan set the tone for the way LeBron James is doing it now. You know, like, Michael Jordan is associated with Nike. He created a brand of shoes that has outlived his career. What you are supposed to do as an athlete. When I came into the game of basketball, athletes had a little short amount of time on the field or in the gym. But off the court, we did a lot of things that were not productive. We spent a lot of time in clubs. We spent a lot of money in a strip club. We did all those things. And the
still
conversation was, no, but not at the ridiculous rate that they were doing it back then. However, the whole conversation was, why are so many black athletes going broke? Because we were not using our capital and our money in ways that could outlive our careers. So right now, when the NBA put into us that you are a corporation, you're not just an athlete. The NBA taught us this, that you can use these things and create things rather than just use that time to do things that are meaningless. So we demonize a guy who took his crew and rather than just paying them money.
Demonize is way too
the media demonizes that group.
No, they don't.
Instead, because they put them in internships, taught them, and we use them to better my career rather than just take. That is the model that you should use for your friends. Rather than just give them and enable them, you give them positions, you teach them how to do things, and then they spread out and they make your brand bigger.
To your point, Phil Jackson called them a posse. The
TB12
is not a part of the media and calling them a posse. Come on, man.
TB12 is a brand.
You know how we talk.
We? Is Phil we? I'm just saying.
I'm just going to say, anything that we think is appropriate, trust me, that legalizes everybody else. I don't care whether we can be as hypocritical as we want to be, but anyway.
Lastly, Jordan had Space Jam. You forget about that.
Yeah, let's forget about that.
Yeah, Space Jam. He had Hanes underwear. Yeah. Oh, but we forget about all that. It's cool because he was a brand too. However, TB12 is a brand, food and training. And then how do we get that footage?
Athletic greatness.
How do we get that footage from a Facebook show? He's filming. You know how much they got on the film?
He's filming footage of his life.
That's how you got to learn about the man. But however, whatever your interests are as an athlete, you can do anything with it right now. You can create. And the best part about the LeBron James crew is that the fact that they are able to do positive things. LeBron is at the head, and he's never by himself. It's him and Maverick Carter or him and Rich. However, let's take Rich Paul's example. I can give my agent this money. I can just throw that 4% wherever his way. Or my friend is sitting here doing something else. Why don't you take an internship, learn about the game,
I want to set the record straight. When LeBron was getting killed by the media for Maverick and all those guys, I'm the guy that went in and wrote the piece and explained Maverick Carter and what LeBron is doing and put a positive spin on it. No one's in a negative space about what he's doing for Maverick, Rich Paul, any of that. And that's not the conversation we're having. We're talking about the greatest athlete of this era is Tom Brady, in my opinion. All the other nice stuff that LeBron is doing, I get it.
They still debate him. I believe he is the greatest football player right now of our era.
Greatest athlete
of
this era. Would I put him up there? Yes, I would. And I just came to this conclusion a couple days ago, actually, because I've always been like, there's no such thing as the best ever. And I say, even about myself.
Agreed.
I mean, you might like Gronkowski. You might like Kellen Winslow. You might Ozzie Newsome, whatever it is. That's up to you to decide. But I think I always talk about, are you in that conversation? Then I start thinking about Tom Brady. And first of all, the whole, he's making a corporation. He should be doing that. I have no problem with that. But what separates Tom Brady for me now is his willingness to take less money. And that's something that I don't think is talked about enough. And I'm talking about during contract times. The reason they are so great out there in New England, and you look at it now, this guy, he's only making $20 million this year. And he had to go ask for a raise this offseason. Yeah. He is so committed to winning that he will take less money. Aaron Rodgers won't do that. Peyton Manning never did that.
Never.
So who wants to win more? How badly do you want to win to go in there and say, you know what, I could be making $35 million a year. Tom Brady can go and he should be getting, if Aaron Rodgers is getting 33, Tom Brady should be getting 33. I think that's fair to say. But he's making $20 million. That's it.
That's honorable, but that's not something I would suggest to any player out there to not get full value.
I think after your first contract, why can't, I don't mean to cut you off.
No,
but after
true.
Your first contract, I always say if you're a rookie, if Jared Goff, when it comes up, you win a Super Bowl this year with the Rams, and whatever, it comes time to get paid, you go get max contract.
Tony,
sorry, you got to take care of yourself. But after that, I would say, I don't understand. What do you need? What's the difference between 33 or 35 or 40 by the time he comes up? Why can't you just take 28?
How come the owners don't take a haircut when 28? They want to go in pursuit of
this is why Tom Brady's not my thing.
Who he's married to? Who's worth more than him? I can take that. When my wife is doubling what I bring in,
look,
we don't need that extra 12 for us to stay here. Where
all
we're
I'm saying,
at.
Look, I paid 17
Can
years.
Else
I, made
do that?
Some, I made some good money. I made some good
you
money.
You want to turn down $12 million?
But I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't know what I would do in that situation. How badly do you want to win? Do you want to surround yourself with the proper team that can get you those five rings? I think that's the extra step that most athletes won't take.
Would you have sacrificed $12 million?
Would I have done it? I don't know.
I do know.
You would have taken that 12.
Let me tell you the other reason why he could and why there's some truth to what Tony's saying. There is money to be made post-career walking around with those five Super Bowl rings that may be six.
Thanks.
As opposed to Aaron Rodgers, who's probably going to retire with one. There's money to be made. So Tom has made a long-term play on and off the field in terms of look at his marriage and marrying someone of that type of value. Again, all of his decisions, though, are consistent with being a dominant athlete. And that's not, again, you can do the LeBron approach, but there's a price to pay, and I think it's the price is going to be how you're viewed when your career is over versus your potential. LeBron could have been the greatest of all time.
He's in the conversation.
He's in the conversation.
MJ wasn't the greatest of all time when he played.
Yeah, when he played.
He wasn't. When MJ, I grew up in the MJ era. I had kids that wanted to be Pippen. I had kids that wanted to be MJ. I wanted to be MJ, but he wasn't the greatest of all time while he was playing.
Right. You need that nostalgia.
He was not playing.
Stop.
He was not at that point in time.
Athletes. I'm a journalist. I know what we were writing and what we were saying.
And y'all destroyed him as journalists. His off-the-court antics, Atlantic City, the gambling.
No.
Why are you gambling on the golf course? I did that too.
After Jordan won those first three titles, and certainly when he won the next three, there wasn't any real controversy about him being the greatest of all time.
After three, they let him have it too,
which is unfair.
Oh, no.
Not really.
I don't remember it that way. I mean, maybe you got the manuscripts and what you wrote. Me just being a viewer and me being a guy trying to ascend to the pro ranks, it was not unanimous that he was the best basketball player of all
Who
time.
Who was?
There was still conversation of Magic and Bird.
Celtics fans that say
Bird.
You heard
a lot of people say Bill Russell. The old school.
Right. Magic
Bill
had Russell five rings and he had three. And you saying that they were saying Jordan was better than Magic?
I got it. Jordan took a couple years off. When he came back and won those next three during his prime, Tom Brady has five. No one else has five.
I'm with that.
No one. He hasn't. If they had won, he might get six.
Crown him.
He's playing the most important sport, the toughest sport, and he's playing the premier position in all of sports. Not remotely controversial that he is the greatest athlete of this era.
Don't you think Tom Brady got to the party a little later than even LeBron and other greats like him? Like TB12 starting in 2016 tells me someone finally got to it, and I heard it was people like Gronkowski.
Just realized
it. It's just like, hey, you know what? You're leaving money out there on the field and off the field by saying with this old adage that I'm first in, last out, and this is all I do. That sounds great. That's old focus. You're old school, so you think about focus like that. One dot on the wall, stare at it, football. Okay, that's cute. But then coaches started to tell us, like you said, the NBA, NFL, put more dots on the wall and learn how to prioritize those dots. And LeBron's been doing that from day one, and it seems like TB12 just got there.
Just got there how? He's got five titles. He's the MVP just last year. He has a chance to be an MVP.
It's greatness, not just best.
He's focused on basketball, on football all year round.
Yeah. He's more focused than anybody else in sports.
He just hasn't realized this. He in Brazil doing this.
I don't know if he's more focused. I'm telling. For me, the only thing that separates him from any of Peyton, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, all those guys, you can't say this guy is better than this guy. I don't believe in that. Right. But it is the cash. It is the cash. You sacrifice your paycheck to win those Super Bowls and rings. Why can't LeBron come out? LeBron's going to be a billionaire. I mean, he already is pretty much. Why can't he come out? I'm just saying, and I'm not telling him what to do, LeBron, if he is watching this. But if I was him, I would say at this point with the money I have in my bank, give me $5 million a year. That's it. And let's go surround ourselves. Let's go beat the Golden State Warriors. Because you're not going to beat them this year with that team. Go get some players. Why can't more athletes do stuff like
that? Because I want a mutual respect from the person whose name is also on my check, the owner, to say, where's your haircut? If I'm in a barbershop, you coming with me, owner. Take a haircut. And the owners are not taking a haircut on profits.
That's the way you think. Tom doesn't think that way.
I can't do it because you ruin it for the next man.
I'm going to put Marcellus in checkmate on that. Dan Gilbert and a lot of these owners, the Steve Ballmer, the Clippers, they go well above the salary cap and pay that luxury tax.
Yes.
So they do get their hair cut often in the NBA to win championships. Golden State's doing it. The Lakers will eventually have to do it. So the owners do take a haircut. Tony's question to me speaks to Brady's level of commitment is at a greater level than everybody else in sports. Now, I'm just sorry. That those are just the facts.
He should be commended for that. You're absolutely correct, Tony. I understand your logic in that one. But as African-Americans, we cannot not take our value because once one person does it, LeBron James, he sets a table for the rest of them. And when it's not appropriate for them, every owner is going to be like, listen, you know what? Why don't you do what LeBron James did and take this $5 million, even if you can't afford to do it? Because everybody can't. He's the
hold
one
on,
person.
Hey, doing hold, that, hold Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers signed for $33 million.
But when you have the ability to do it, when it doesn't affect your – your balance sheet, your home balance sheet, like it would if a one person who's one income in that household. It's different than when you have two incomes and one is way higher than the other.
And it's grander than race. This is for a white athlete. This is for anybody who steps on the field. You know it. The time is ticking. You have a finite shelf life. You have a 3-year average, and you could be great as you want to be and play 10 to 20 years. But it will expire. There's an expiration date on everyone's jersey. But it's not necessarily the same for the owners. So we're dealing in different time frames, different time realms. I am not going to take less in the pursuit of a championship when I'm not hearing anyone else who's a part of this same team, hand in the middle, sitting there saying they're going to do the same thing. Well, it has to be a collective effort.
Just like Jason just said, though, Tom has done that. Yeah. And that is the reason why I would
put
him
like that. And it backfired on Tom. Tom got upset when he gave money back for Wes Welker. And then they traded Wes Welker. And then he said, where's the money then? And they said, oh, we kept
it. It backfired.
When you say it backfired,
he's got five championship rings.
And the guys, he's worth gold when his career is over.
Gold.
He will be the epitome, whether we like it or not. And I'm telling you, look, it was right there for LeBron to get. He's not as committed to basketball as Tom Brady is to football. Again, we keep
But who's greater as an athlete? Go to
who's greater than an athlete? That's LeBron. Whose performance and accomplishments make them the greatest is Tom Brady.
Jason, you answered your own question. I love this fun fest we had, but the greatest athlete is LeBron, correct? So you just said
Tom
it.
Brady, that's a whole different
Tom Brady is LeBron James on the Golden State Warriors. He's the greatest athlete on the greatest team of the era. Mm. You understand that? Like, their organization, the greatest.
Because they can pay the players to be around him, though.
But they have unique situation over there. Great coach, great organization, great player. LeBron James is not in that, or was not in the same type of organization. Great owner.
We got to stop this at some point, and we'll stop it here. But again, we're talking about a 41-year-old athlete
balling,
still playing at the highest.
Absolutely. We've never seen this before in the history of sports.
But let's dismiss it because we're all LeBron groupies in America now.
We got a 41-year-old out there doing things we've never seen anybody do.
Greatest football player.
But we got to dismiss. He's playing the most important sport. He's playing the hardest position. He's got 5 titles. We've never seen a champion like this. He's made more sacrifice. He's more focused.
Hey,
it is what it is.
Uggs or LeBron 15s? What you going to do? I mean, what you gonna wear? Thank you. It's just a big
Aston Martin. Aston Martin commercial.
Yeah,
it's cool,
man. I'm gonna make 12 cars.
All right, welcome back, Whitlock and Wiley. Tony Gonzalez is here, and we're joined now by Hall of Famer Rod Woodson. Let's move to some big stories, starting in Dallas, where the Cowboys offense finally showed up yesterday, blowing out the Jaguars 40-7. Dak Prescott put up his best game of the season, and afterward, even the Jags' notorious trash talker, Jalen Ramsey, didn't have a whole lot to say.
How much of a shock is it that this defense comes out and gets their ass beat, considering the talent you guys have?
I don't know, man.
You guys have played together a lot as a secondary. How do you kind of explain some of the blown assignments that you guys had early in this game?
That was fun.
Coach said that he felt like it wasn't an effort issue, it was a miscommunication issue. Would you agree with that?
I don't know.
Jalen, what challenge did Cole Beasley pose today?
I don't know.
Defense usually plays with a lot of swagger and confidence. What needs to happen to kind of get you guys motivated?
I don't know.
Love the hat, don't love the answer.
Now you don't want to feel the pain.
Marcel, Cowboys fixed or the Jaguars a mess?
Jaguars a hot mess. You look at the Jaguars and the expectations coming off the AFC Championship game. Some people suggested, and I think they internalized, that they should have won that game if they stayed aggressive in the second half. And what happens when you start to think like that, oh, we should have had that one, we get them next time, is that you don't go back to square one. And square one is how they got to the AFC Championship game with that vaunted defense and the running game. And what you're seeing now, especially the last 2 weeks, is time of possession coming back to kill this team. No Leonard Fournette. All of a sudden, you can't pound them. When you can't pound them, the defense that is so great is on the field to the tune of 38 minutes for the Cowboys. And then you look at the KC game, their tongues are hanging out of their mouth, and all of a sudden, they're not talking to trash. They're out there looking like trash. So I think right now, time of possession, no running game, is starting to erode this team.
I watched that game. I love the way Dak Prescott played. I think, didn't throw for a bunch of yards, but the 80-some-odd rushing yards coupled with the 182 in the air, I think the game was more about the Cowboys finding themselves and the Jaguars being a little bit of one-hit wonders last year.
You know, I look at the game and go with the Dallas Cowboys first. I enjoyed watching Dak play the way he played. All right. And I say that because he got to the first read, he went to the second read, and then he got out. And then that's who Zach is. He's not going to throw for 350 yards. He's not going to have those big games like that. He'll have a couple here and there in his career, but he should be comfortable with that. And then you give the ball to Zeke, has to touch the ball 25 to 30 times in the game, either rushes and passes. And he had 25. He had 24 rushes, one reception. So if they can stay within that mantra, that offense will be okay because that defense is a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. It really is. It really is. And then, but when you look in Jacksonville, I think their defense is still good. They're not as good as what everybody thought they were going to be this year. You can't just show up and think you're going to be the best team in the National Football League week in and week out. But my key is for them is that I never been a fan of, and I never believed in Blake Bortles being that star quarterback who could take this team to the next level. If when you watch him play, he's the weak link of that whole football team. And if they don't have a backup quarterback and they don't have an answer to that to help this defense outside of the running game, it's going to be a long year for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I agree with you what you said about Dak for sure. This is what you need to do. Because my new benchmark for quarterbacks in the NFL is you got to have 250 yards. But the rules, the way they're set up, you should be able to get 250 yards unless you are out there running for over 50 yards. Then you can have below that 200-yard mark. And him, I think he's had one game over 200 yards in the last six, seven games going back to last year. So use your feet, Dak. And that's the only way I will buy you as a franchise quarterback from here on out. And then looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think the worst thing to ever happen to them was to come out and play so well against New England that second game. But that was fool's gold because that wasn't the New England team that we see now. And they got all big a little bit. And then Strahan talks about this. He said, when people have great success, AFC Championship games, Super Bowls, the hardest thing coming back next year is every player on that team thinks, we made it because of me. And when you have that attitude, that slows your progress down. And I think this is what's going on with Jacksonville. Ramsey is getting all that attention. Everybody thinks it's because of me that we got there. And now all of a sudden, that attitude creeps up on you. I had it. We went to NFC Championship game. We came back. I think we won two games the next year. Mm. It happens. This is why teams are so different from year to year.
Same might be true with the Philadelphia Eagles. That's a story for another day. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Rod Woodson is still here. As you all know, I'm a journalist. We've got our resident Ivy Leaguer, Marcellus Wiley, here. So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look into the world of sports. All right, Darnell's here. Bring out Marcellus's thinking cap.
Uh-huh.
Ivy Leaguer here with his motorboard.
Oh, let them wear princely garbs. Stop, thief.
Thank you very much.
Now, as a Purdue grad, Rod, you're probably in over your head here with a
very much so. State school.
All right, let's move to the NFL. Where the shootout between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes was a fitting end to a Sunday chock full of high-octane offense. Four teams scored at least 40 points yesterday, and even Brock Osweiler looked unstoppable, throwing for 380 yards against the Bears, allegedly great defense. Mm. Clearly, the league's efforts to emphasize offense have worked, with teams averaging more than 24 points per game, on pace for an all-time high. But while the league's theory seems to be that more offense is always better, I'm not so sure. And I'm going to use last night's Sunday Night Football game as my jumping off point. Had there been some defense added to that game, we would have seen an all-time great game. We didn't. They've gone too far with this offensive deal. That game was diminished by its lack of defense. And if you really love football, the best game played was between Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, where there was offense and defense played. I just think we've overdone it with offense, and the removal, the making defense illegal, has actually hurt football.
I disagree about last night's game. It came in with tremendous hype. You heard the announcer say it. I felt it. It exceeded the hype to this point. When it was 24-9 at halftime, and, you know, the football player in me says, if Kansas City doesn't score quick, this game is over. So my behaviors are I'm about to watch the first drive of the second half and then watch some Ozark. I got to catch up. I'm on my Ozark. And they score quickly. And next thing you know, my primal instincts kick in. Not my theories, not what is best for the sport, not overthinking it. Just in reaction mode. And my wife's next to me, and she's loving life because she's on Instagram while she's now unchallenged to just swipe up all night long while I am consumed by this great football game. And it takes me back to last year's Super Bowl, 41-33. It takes me last night, 43-40. High scoring gets the guy and the gal that's on the fence, the casual fan, the one who really doesn't love football, but is like, ah, see food, eat food. You see points, love points. And I'm in the same place even as a purist like you. I just love seeing the offensive go out there on the offensive level and just put up points galore.
You know, when you look at the game of football, and I'm a defensive guy, right? So, but I loved the game last night. I mean, yeah. Even though it was a shootout, I loved the game. But then I go back a couple weeks, Cleveland versus the Baltimore Ravens. It was 12-9. I loved that game. I love the same game, but I know what Marcellus is saying is that the person who's the fantasy world, the people who live in that atmosphere, like seeing points on the board. And there's more of those people than pure football people like me.
I disagree.
All right? And because you look at it, and I'm saying, look, points on the board, it's ringing, it's ringing, it's ringing. It's like a slot machine. People
yeah,
like
right.
slot machines.
Right.
People like slot machines. Mm-hmm. Most people don't like that slow scoring.
No.
Dreaded, defense is hitting in the mouth, quarterbacks getting hit, receivers dropping the ball. People don't like seeing the old school football. But the old, real football people, we like to see that.
See, here's what I think everybody's missing out on. What people, and I listened to Colin Cowherd's show today, and Colin was saying, you know, people want to see scoring, people want to see the quarterbacks make all these plays. What people want to see is great competition. That's what attracts you to sports. Great competition. And so they want to see someone do something great against great resistance. And that's what we're missing with all of this offense, is we're missing the great resistance. If Patrick Mahomes throws four touchdowns against a great defense, wow, that's mind-blowing. Against the Patriots, and what Tom Brady, and again, as Tom Brady was terrific, and some of his long balls and dimes, it was great. But the Kansas City Chiefs, and this isn't just the fan in me as a Chiefs fan, the Kansas City Chiefs defense was embarrassing to me.
Yeah,
embarrassing. Yeah. It was they were running the ball so easily with running backs not that talented. And I know they got the young Sony Michel, the rookie guy,
nice.
Or whatever.
Nice.
But I just don't see it. That wasn't Le'Veon Bell putting it on the Kansas City Chiefs. That wasn't some great offensive line putting it on the Chiefs. That was an average offensive line with slightly above average or average running backs that just shoved it down the Chiefs' throat. And I'm just people want to see great competition. They want heroes on both sides of the ball. It's hard for me to name, other than Dante Hightower, it's hard for me to name a defensive player. I guess the McCourty
twins, Patrick Chung.
They were facing people.
Trey Flowers. I mean,
name somebody on the Chiefs defense.
You got him. Eric Berry, come back.
No, D. Ford, right?
Eric Berry, where are you?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? That if you look at defenses, like over the years, we've always said, oh, you know, steel curtain, and then we get an 85 Bears. Like, I just think that I'm not interested in a defensive struggle unless they have a nickname and they come in with this daunted reputation and I'm like, okay, I'm watching collective greats play defense. But an offensive game, I just want to just see points go up and I don't give a damn who's out there doing it. And it's crazy because that is what we're talking about. The machinery of the NFL is trying to change, not the base. And I think your argument is pure to the base of football. It's trying to change the margins because like in any political discussion, any discussion, relationships, you're not changing the core of me. You're changing me on the edges. So what the NFL is doing is trying to change people that are on the fence, on the edge. And it's a smart play for them because the Jacksonville defense 2 weeks ago was amazing. And then they saw KC and whatever you think of Dallas. Now, all of a sudden, what is a great defense if it gets exposed by even greater offense?
You know, I look at it, and yes, they've changed a lot of the rules. They've changed they're talking about quarterbacks are overprotected, you got the defense as receiver, but that still shouldn't dictate to you as a defender how you play. So, and I say that by, think about Speaks.
Yes,
defensive lineman
I'm glad you got there.
For New England.
Yeah, yeah.
He hit Tom Brady, he didn't bring him to the ground because he thought he threw the ball already, he thought he released the ball. But his interview after that in the locker room said, I will never do that again. So he's gonna learn. And most the really good ones, Don't let that yellow flag dictate how they're going to play. They're still going to shoot through the receiver. They're still going to play as physical and fast as they need to play on the defensive side. Staying on top of a receiver is like coverage 101 rules.
Right.
We've seen guys in bump and run all day long. Bump and run is not good in the National Football League unless it's called. But they're playing that way on a consistent basis, and quarterbacks are just taking shots down the field. You know, so I think the rules have changed some of the dynamics of the defense and what you can and cannot do. But the basis of who you are as a player, you still got to be a competitor and go challenge a guy.
But don't let him off the hook. Don't let Speaks off the hook. Like, I heard his reaction, and I saw all the sympathy cards going in the mail all the way to Kansas City. The rule change made you act like that. There's not an NFL rule says don't tackle the quarterback.
Don't take him to the ground.
So the first, there's no rule that said you can't take him to the ground.
Have you asked Clay Matthews if there's not a rule that says don't?
Oh, Clay Matthews
with your body
was guilty with your body weight. Slam your son like that, I dare you. You're not.
They
tackle the quarterback like he's your son.
They just fined T.J. Watt $20,000. For touching
that
the guys.
That one was ridiculous. Now, that's ridiculous, that's not what he could have done. In this moment, you know what? He's a rookie, thrown into action.
Yeah.
And, you know, Houston's out. And he's like, oh, my God, this is a big moment. And then he's like, oh, let me be overcautious in this moment. But guess what? Do your job first. To Rob's point, you don't sit there and say, because I'm scared of the infraction, I'm not even going to do my job first.
Why would... I can't believe you're not sympathetic.
No,
and can't understand that the rules that they put in have made people, instead of just playing the game, these guys have to overthink the game. And that play, again, I'm a Chiefs fan, but that was just one of the plays that just made me sick. And I immediately, when Chris Collinsworth called it out, I thought it was a great catch by him to see that happened.
Yeah.
And then it just made me say, see, this is my problem, man. They making it so hard on the defensive guys, they don't even know when to tackle.
Meek Mill said there's levels to this, and there's levels to this. The first level is get him on the ground and do that.
Do your job first.
Do your job first in the most gentle manner you can. Like, a sack doesn't – you don't get two sacks for slamming them. You don't get two sacks for lying on them.
Right.
You get a sack for wherever way you get them down.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, Cliff Avril and T.J. Houshmandzadeh are back. Let's move to some big stories, starting in New York, where Odell Beckham Jr. is still making waves, and they appear to have reached all the way up to the owner's box. After a lot of back and forth over Odell's ESPN interview last week, which was not cleared by the team, owner John Mara just called out his $95 million wide receiver.
I wish he would create the headlines by his play on the field as opposed to what he says and does off the field. I think he needs to do a little more playing, a little less talking.
This is foolish by the Giants owner. They just stepped into Odell's arena, the reality show arena. Listen, they made a mistake, in my view, in giving this guy a long-term contract. He showed you exactly who he was. Odell's not out of character in any way. He's an attention seeker. He's a reality TV star. He's doing interviews with Lil Wayne sitting next to him. He's exactly who we thought he was. And they just stepped into his arena by calling him out in the media.
Nah, I disagree with that. Look, the owner, John Morrow, has been in that arena before him. Even let's go back to last year. You talk about how the media is used as a weapon, how public perception, public opinion, the court of public opinion is used for or against you. John Morrow sat there and allowed his organization to bench one Eli Manning and then let the media as a weapon change his mind from what he knew was the right thing to do. So now he's like, Odell, if you want to play that game, I'm well-versed in it. Let's play it. So now Odell is trying to play that game, and John Mara is smart to use it against Odell because talking to Odell one-on-one has gotten you this far, and seeing Odell around his teammates and apologize to his teammates has gotten you this far. But how can we get farther down the road? How can we move this ball down the field? It's by applying this pressure to Odell, letting you know all them likes and followers, they ain't all on your side because I'm the owner and you have to respect what I'm saying.
Wow. I'm not looking at it as they made a mistake in giving him the contract. Where they made him, they did make a mistake in giving him that contract. And the reason is they don't have the team around him that can justify why he's made. They don't have the quarterback. They don't have the offensive line play. When you give a receiver that type of money, that's like your last push to make a push into the – they don't have that team around. Eli Manning is not that quarterback, and he hasn't been a quarterback for – Odell Beckham is – he's being himself. Don't get mad at me for being who I am. I'm speaking my mind. I've showed you, like you said, who I am. When I show you who I am, believe me, because I'm showing you. They don't have the team. You look at it, he's averaging over 84 yards a game. He's not playing bad. He just doesn't have a quarterback that can get him the ball consistently. And if you can protect Eli, he probably would be a little better, but not much.
No, I agree. So I think the big thing with Odell is he's been himself through this. When he wasn't making that much money and now he's making a lot of money, he's been himself. So I don't see why people have an issue with it. I don't see why organization has an issue with it other than the fact that they're losing. When you're winning, they let everything
go. That's
sad.
That's the sad part.
When you're winning, they let everything slide. But when you start losing, now we need you to calm down. And then it's such a fine line between passion and anger, right? When he's scoring touchdowns, everybody's geeked about it. He's happy. Everyone's happy. But as soon as he doesn't feel like he's playing well and he shows a little emotion, now it's an issue. And I don't agree with that.
But again, the interview wasn't on the field. And that was off the field. That was a calculated decision. And I'm going to stir the pot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit here with Lil Wayne. And what John Maher is saying, which I blame John Maher. You gave him $100 million. That's a license for him to do whatever the hell he wants to do. And Odell Beckham Jr. has shown you I'm going to
but
do
you know what, though?
Whatever you want to do.
On every team, and we know this, there's four or five guys that can go to the head coach whenever they want. There's four or five guys that can pretty much – when Odell did that interview, all he was saying is what everybody in the locker room thought. They're just scared to say it, and they can't say it. That's all that was.
They gave him $100 million, though, to be a partner and a leader, not a guy that stirred the pot.
Yeah, that's the problem I have. You
stirred
guys
the pot.
Y'all talking like Odell could just have open forum to whatever he wants because he's been doing this, but who too much is given, much is expected. When your titles change in any workplace, guess what? Your responsibility changes.
And that's what he did. He took the responsibility to say what he said.
There's different ways of leading, too, now.
It's different ways of leading, but let it at least be in an accord with this organization. Can we be on the same page somehow as one of our leaders heavily invested in you? You guys know this. Look, I respect all my teammates. I respect my coaches, even when we disagree. But there's one person I need to listen to. And I don't say that in a yes, sir, no, sir way. I say it like there's two names on every check. My name and the dude who's about to give me that money. And guess what? I at least got to come to that guy, whether it's in private. And if I didn't get his respect in private, I'm not going public. And to me, Odell is trying to speak to an audience that is not his supporting audience. It's coming from upstairs down, not from these guys who now turned on Odell, some of them, and said, apologize.
See, they
but you're speaking for me?
They know they need to replace Eli. Management, they see that and they know that now. They didn't want Odell coming out saying that.
Yeah.
They see like, we messed up. We probably should have drafted one of these quarterbacks instead of Saquon Barkley. They can't do anything until next year. They know that now, and they just want Odell to be quiet about it because they see we done messed
up. But they benched Eli last year.
But again, when they give you $100 million, they should have the reasonable expectation we can get through this season without you going off script on us. I'm John Maher. We sat in the room. We had a conversation. I'm giving you $100 million. It can't be I'm going to lead my way. We got to be on the same accord once they give you $100 million.
But the thing is, you can't expect someone to change once you give them some money. Who he showed he was the first 4 years is who he's going to be even maximized a little more.
This offseason, Odell had a conversation with John Maher. This offseason, Odell, who said he was not coming to anything extracurricular, OTA, et cetera, what was Odell doing? Showing up to every single thing. I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to be on the same page.
Until he gets a check.
And then he got
but he goes back to being himself.
And guess what? Now I'm going back to where I've been.
You know what's so funny?
Like, the media weapon.
This is just me. He not doing anything wrong. Like, he's not breaking the law. He's not doing anything.
That can't be the standard. Just because you don't break the law. Like he's got a job.
He's speaking his mind. Like, if he thinks Eli sucks, why can't he say Eli sucks?
Because they're not paying him for that. They're paying him to catch the ball.
That's his opinion.
Then he should take a job here and do this.
When he probably will.
He should do this. I'll switch places with him.
Listen.
Give me the $100 million and I'll go play wide receiver.
Yeah, you look like the rest of the receivers.
But you still have an opinion. Why can't you voice that?
Because they gave me $100 million.
I've been on teams where we've been at halftime of games. Guys that don't even play, and the guy know who I am if he's watching it, would straight up tell a guy that's starting, you suck, why you playing?
I get
during
it.
Halftime of
you
the game.
You said that to Chad Johnson?
if you can play,
what about I gave you $100 million, do I need to see you hitting your head on a fan to show everybody that you care more than all the other players? Well, you know you don't. But they care as much as you, but they know how to act.
But that's how competition gets the best of
them. Yeah, that's how he shows his emotion.
Man,
that's the reality. reality
that's
show.
A production. No,
see,
that's
production. I'm surprised he's a defensive player.
Desperate
when you get
house
mad,
receivers.
You just go headbutt the lineman.
Yeah, but also I know when we losing the game, I'm not going to take it out on the bench. He ain't blocking me.
That's desperate house receivers, man. That's desperate house receivers. Oh. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Steven Jackson and Dante Jones are still here. As you guys know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer here, Marcellus Wiley.
There we go.
Thank you.
So we're putting on our thinking caps, and we're going to take a deeper look at some of the big issues in sports. All right, come on, Darnell, bring out Marcellus's thinking cap.
Darnell, what you got on today, though?
That's that
Warren Central.
The best high school in the night.
Steven, are you comfortable right now? Are you comfortable?
I graduated high school.
What junior college did you graduate from?
I was only left 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah. That goes to show you, education is overrated.
None and done.
Overrated.
None and done.
Let's move to LeBron James on the latest episode of LeBron's The Shop on HBO. Drake is incredibly deferential to King James, admitting that he asked LeBron for guidance and approval on how to respond to a diss track by Pusha T and Kanye West, and explaining why he chose to take the high road and not respond at all.
I wanted to do other things. I didn't want to further your reputation or your career by rapping back at you and having this exchange. And that was it for me.
Drake texts you and like, am I letting you down?
Yeah, what did I tell you?
What did you say to him?
He said that I can never let you down.
I said, listen, as a hip hop historian who loves hip hop, I would love for you to respond.
Of course, we want to hear. We're dying.
I did,
for,
by the way.
Because you're the greatest.
By the way, I did.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
You wrote the song.
I did, yeah. And I said terrible things.
Yeah, I said.
And I, got
I want
home.
You every time respond every time. I said self. That's it. Selfishly in all caps.
Yeah, yes, you're selfish. Yeah.
I said
because you
want to
hear it.
I want you to know one thing. You can. We're family. You're a brother of mine. You could never ever let me down ever.
All right, for me, that was a very weird dynamic given the fact that LeBron is not in the hip-hop world. Drake is managed by Birdman, the modern-day Suge Knight. Also, for about the past 20 years, rappers have been at the top of the black culture food chain. Jay-Z and Beyonce have been the first family of black popular culture. Jay and Bey were friends of the Obamas. But watching Drake with LeBron made me wonder if there's a cultural shift happening with the black athlete reestablishing himself as the head of black popular culture. It seems to me LeBron James is now the king of black popular culture, supplanting Jay-Z.
Hey, it's B, not Bay. It's B. Get a name.
Don't do the queen like that.
That high.
Don't do the queen like that.
Woo. I'm sorry.
Texas.
I'm sorry.
It's B.
All right, Marcellus, we'll start with you.
Get it right.
You're right, Dave.
Is there a cultural shift here? Am I right?
I don't think there's a shift. I think we're returning to form. Thank you very much. Let's talk about what the form is. Athletes have always been the most respected in our culture. Why? Because we're in the meritocracy. You actually beat somebody. You actually faster somebody. You actually dunked on somebody. Where everything else becomes this subjective experience. Oh, that sounds better. That looks better. And in a world where we're talking about fashion, sports, and music, which is culture, athletes have always been the most respected, but not the most revered. So it takes a time. Look, you go out with a musician, good luck trying to get some love if you're an athlete, because the musician's gonna win. You go out with an actor, good luck trying to get some love in the parking spot when you're out there with somebody of that celebrity. However, this is a time, like when Jordan was winning, when we have a tug of war. Like, there's actually an athlete up there with a Jay-Z. So when it's a tie always goes to the athlete. I think we're returning to that place.
I think there's a shift here. And Steven, I'm going to go to you because you're in the hip-hop world and you've been in the athletic world. I feel like for the last 20 years, Jay-Z has been at the top. And LeBron is, in my mind, justifiably, and, you know, maybe it's not intentional, but I'm glad he's supplanting Jay-Z.
Well, I can't really just say Jay-Z been at the top because when you speak of the culture, it's a whole bunch of faces that make the culture.
Somebody's at the top, though.
I can't
of put, anything.
Everybody's needed. Everybody's voice makes the culture. It's not one person or one face that makes the culture. I'm sorry, but this is the truth. Jay-Z, Puff Daddy.
Well, you have leaders.
You got athletes. That's at the top, but it's not one person.
I can understand.
It's not one person.
Ali wasn't at the top.
Jordan wasn't at the top.
Jordan was not at the top.
Really? I thought in the 90s you couldn't be bigger than Jordan in terms of culture.
Jordan is the biggest basketball player
to date with shoes and everything. So that's another level. Mm-hmm. But as far as the culture, Jordan has never been the leader of our culture.
Oh, well, I hear where you're going with that.
I understand what Locke is trying to say in the fact that LeBron, because he covers so many areas of the culture, most rappers will not go into politics and into the youth and into the rap world in general or into sports. They just handle their own field. And LeBron is trying to step into the rap game and trying to associate with rappers and show love and show support all the time to rap, his favorite rappers and to music in general. And then he's broadened his scope out to entertainment and all things that are involved in our culture right now. And our culture has expanded over time. And I think he is the one that can cover most of the realms of the culture. So that's what Whitlock is trying to say. And I have an appreciation for it, but I think he's probably one of the major voices, but it's a collective effort in this culture.
But I think too, people gotta understand that people respect success. People respect money. So when rappers and basketball players get together, it's a mutual respect.
Facts.
Especially from coming from nothing to reaching the top. Now, LeBron is different from Jordan and other players because LeBron, you can see LeBron, he's made the money. The money didn't make him. Mm. You know, he's perfect example. Playoff game, I'm working the playoff game in the finals. LeBron is warming up. He stops his warm-up to come speak to me. He ain't got to do that. I guarantee if it was Kobe or Jordan, they wouldn't have done that. LeBron is humble. He's a different type of superstar. We've never seen a superstar like LeBron. So that's why you see guys like Drake gravitate to him because they can open up to him. He's not those superstars that hide from that need security. He's not one of those guys. He's very transparent. That's why I think people love LeBron. They respect him so much because he's not the average superstar.
But Stephen, you know, part of your point where I just completely disagree with is I don't think at this time LeBron James will be anywhere caught on camera asking another man, you remember when I texted you for your approval? And what did you say to me? That kind of deference from Drake to me signals something because I'm telling you, 10 years ago, they would have put out a video of all the athletes going and bending a knee and kissing Jay-Z's ring.
I disagree.
That's a fact.
That's his homeboy.
I think you took that a little bit out of context.
He kissed LeBron's ring.
No, he didn't. What he did was he someone he could respect and someone that understands what he's going through and someone whose opinion that he hold in high reverence. And I think that's what he said when he asked him, like, am I tripping? That was kind of like, am I tripping by not doing this? Do I need to respond? He needed somebody he could sound off that had the same amount to lose, could understand the position that he was
in. You're not my brother if you're going to lead me to a dead end and throw me off the cliff.
Give me
a good advice you would give your son.
Give me the game.
And that's all that is.
Because you got the same
perspective
from the top.
I got genuine love. I'm going to give you a real game. Like he said, I could easily tell you to go respond. Yeah. But why do that?
Yeah.
I see the bigger picture.
You don't see any deference there.
But you're using Drake, and this is where I think it gets exaggerated. Drake is not the necessary gauge to show there's been a change of guard.
Who's at the top of the rap game right now?
Oh, Drake. Yeah, but I'm going to talk about Drake the person, and this is not a shot, but this is just reality. Drake is an outlier in terms of what he's been through. He even said it. He's like, man, my experience is different than all of you guys' experience. He said, I walked around with the bad shape up in part because I couldn't go to the shop because I grew up in a white Jewish mother-raised family, and my father wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, I get into this game, and I'm just surrounded by people that I thought were heroes. So what Drake is, we call it fanboy. And I respect fanboy because I'm a fanboy now that I'm retired. Drake will walk up to a Kentucky basketball game, Toronto Raptors game, walk up to Serena. Well, hello. Walk up to...
give out $1 million on this video.
Million-dollar video. Conor McGregor. Like, he's like... And it's a thing on Instagram and Twitter that Drake is like bad luck. But the reality is he big ups everyone. So when he goes to LeBron... It's one, his boy, but two, he's like embodied that. Like, I'm not going to sit there and act like you're not big in your own world.
Right. He shows genuine love, and he puts all his cards on the table, and it shows. And his ability to be genuine is something I respect about him.
Me too.
Because he doesn't care about other people's thoughts. But to be able to ask somebody's opinion who sees the world like you see it, to be at the top and to see and to look down
Steven.
And to see the whole picture, I thought that's what he was doing.
Steven, let me ask you this. I'm stunned by your take on this whole deal. Mm-hmm. What's Birdman thinking when he sees his guy, he made Cash Money Records? Drake to me treated LeBron like he was Birdman. We haven't seen that
But do you think that he's having conversations with Birdman about life and what he thinks he should be doing?
You know what's crazy?
I don't think that's the person he's going to check on about life and to be socially responsible for what he has to do. I don't think that's what he's doing.
Why is it a problem, Tate, that two guys showing mutual respect? And then right. I wouldn't put Drake at the top. If you know anything about hip-hop now, it's a whole bunch of people at the top. Migos at the top. It's a lot of people at the top right now. You can't just put one person.
Nah, Steve, don't do that.
I'm
Stop.
Telling you.
Steve, don't
Who's
do that.
Who's filling up arenas?
Yeah,
Steve.
I went to the Migos, Drake. They put up arenas, too. I went to the Migos, Drake concert.
Who on tour together?
Them two. And who comes out first?
No question.
Migos, because there's levels to this.
You
got to
give it to the man.
Wayne's at the top. There's so many people at the top.
Wayne's my favorite.
If Hov was the MJ of his time, Drake is LeBron James.
Yeah, man.
Of his era. Like, he doesn't miss. Like, he's always on top.
He got seven dates in L.A.
He's not the top by himself.
He got seven dates in L.A.
You know what I just reached for? You ain't been on since I brought this Twitter off. And I'm starting to get concerned. I'm starting to be concerned about you. Are you concerned about who's watching this and you're going to disrespect somebody?
No, not
Little Wayne just texted you. Yeah, what? Or, who are you trying not to disrespect?
Shout out to Wayne. Wayne, that's been my partner. So
How are you going to sit here and tell me that LeBron James right now, he's making movies, he's got television shows out the yin yang, he's opened a school, and now I'm looking at Drake, the biggest star in hip-hop, basically go kiss his ring. You don't watch The Godfather. Man. You don't see people kiss the ring, and that was kissing the ring.
And he didn't go to another...
This goes to show why it's hard for you to show mutual respect and give your brother
this is why, to Jason's point, because of this person right here. Look, if you were the biggest rapper, Drake, why don't you go to the other biggest rapper, which is Jay-Z?
But who are y'all to say who I got to go to?
No, he's saying...
Because I may not have that relationship. They have that type of relationship. They spend time together. So he just had a situation with another rapper who's in competition with him.
Right.
And Kanye, and he said and showed you how that broke down by going to him. Like, going into your own profession is probably harder than...
It got diffused by his own profession. It got diffused by rap a lot and by everybody in that lane. I understand what Jay-Z...
He probably wasn't the only person he checked in with, too.
Maybe a better conversation is, Jay-Z, why isn't Jay-Z in that position that LeBron is in?
He called Jay Prince.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's rapper to rapper. That's rap industry to rap industry. He crossed over and went to the athletic sphere, which is, to Jason's point of, does that mean that no longer Jay-Z is the god of our culture, the Hov? It's like, is LeBron that guy? And that, to me, is more interesting.
But we was watching the show. We don't know
if he did or not.
We was watching the show, Whitlock. The show is called The Shop. We was watching the show.
It's just a little piece of the evidence that LeBron James is now at the top of black popular culture. It's a piece of evidence. And I can't believe you, as a former basketball player, I can't believe you can't see it because, again...
Not by itself.
I'm going to tell you the point that I thought you was going to make and we talked about was, again, you know why LeBron's at the top? Because LeBron's making the most money.
I said respect money.
But he's making the most money because the music industry has died. It has died. They're not making the kind of money they used to make.
You don't even know who Lil Baby is. He making millions. You don't even know who that is. You don't even know who Lil Pump is. He making money. It's a whole bunch of little rappers you never heard of. That's making millions.
Just because they making money don't mean they making LeBron
money. But what's the point
in
rapping for?
Just because that don't mean they making LeBron money and what these athletes are making now. And that's great. Look, man, Tech N9ne and I have been friends for 20 years. He's making $7-8 million a year. He ain't on LeBron's level in some of these
millions
athletes.
Millions is millions.
There's more
money. No, don't do that. Millions ain't millions. Hey, it's the whole evolution of
millions
our culture.
Millions is millions.
The culture is the culture.
Guys, what you got?
Is directed by social media engagement, money. It's different things that to be involved in how you control the culture or how you be at the top of the culture.
Right.
And some guys have some of those categories filled, but nobody has it filled like LeBron
does. I was playing devil's advocate, but Jason is on to this point. And the black historians will tell you this. In the 60s and 70s, if you were big, athletic, and said, I have some athletic pursuits, you went where? Boxing. Why? Because the heavyweight champion of the world was the crown of the culture, right? Muhammad Ali and others.
Yes.
That changed in the 80s when basketball started taking over. Why? in part because they started making more money. Magic Johnson's lifetime contract, and that started to surpass what we saw in boxing. Then that all of a sudden changed with the rap game in the 80s, 90s, and Snoop and all them guys. And we were like, wait a minute. Are the rappers making more money than the basketball players? And they certainly have more freedom because they ain't got to be in shape, and they could travel the world and do this thing. I think Jason's point is in alignment to that. Are we back to where basketball has trumped?
And not just basketball, and he's more football visible too. Is sports, yeah, and athletics are back on top. And we didn't even get to the other part of the conversation.
Screaming. That I want. No, it's money there. It's money there. But you think Drake is making LeBron money?
No.
Steven, stop it.
I didn't say that.
Okay, I'm just asking.
Stop. And there's a bunch of other ones.
Success.
Steph Curry.
We all see Steph.
Yeah, man.
Kevin Durant. All these dudes.
But Bron is everywhere you turn on a TV. He's on HBO. Yeah. He's on ESPN. He's on Fox. Yeah. He's every topic every day.
Yes.
And once he speaks and once he does things, the world opens up. Nobody else likes it. But nobody else has the coverage like he does.
But Steven, you don't count money.
All I do is defend him.
Like, do you guys? If you have kids, you're counting people's money. You know why? Because when my kid is getting to that age.
That's my child.
Oh, no. But the reason why you count money, because you want to say what options are out there and what's it going to bring you back in terms of resources. We do count money. If so, I hear too many parents and former athletes and teammates say, man, my son ain't playing volleyball. I'm like, why?
Ain't no money.
Well, ain't no money. So now we
don't
see.
That ain't
why
my son ain't playing volleyball.
You know what?
I can't. I tried to save it. I tried to get you.
I say golf. It's not as much money. It's not as much visibility.
Steven.
The man got shoes. The man he's selling tickets right now, selling jerseys.
I love you,
and
brother.
And he's on stage with Drake.
You a hell of a man. I'm glad we participated in this conversation. Love you. But I'm right and you wrong.
See what happened when you ain't got his number? See what happened when y'all ain't texting no more?
Y'all know what time it is.
Dante.
It's time now to put Marcellus on the spot and get to some of the hot button issues of the day in a segment we like to call Tell Us Marcellus. Let's start in the NFL, where Aaron Rodgers led the Packers to yet another comeback win last night, putting up 10 points in the final 2 minutes to take down the 49ers. As usual, the media lost their minds over Rodgers' performance, but tell us, Marcellus, were you as impressed with Rodgers as everyone else?
I wasn't, and I don't want to be Donald Downer. I get it. It seems amazing, but one, you shouldn't be in that position in the first place if you're the Green Bay Packers. That's a one-win team out there without their starting quarterback, their franchise quarterback. So I used to always laugh when our teammates would get love and our quarterbacks, oh, man, he's Captain Comeback. I'm like, but why are we down after three? You know, I used to always sit there and just get caught up with that. But something was revealing about watching Aaron Rodgers last night, and it's his leadership. And his leadership comes into conversation, if not question, because he's feeling the pressure of being the best player without the best resume. Like, he's the best player, but then he looks at that one championship, and he looks at his two MVPs, and I think this comparison is getting the best at him. Why do I notice that? You watch him. He talks to his teammates, and he talks at them. He talks down to them. When he messes up, overthrows them, whatever it is, no conversation. When they mess up, it's a teaching moment every single time. And that's revealing because I think Kobe Bryant described that in his growth in leadership, and he had to get out of that world. He had to get out of using those methods because if you can't level the playing field as players, you're not going to get the best out of me no matter how grand and great you are. So Aaron Rodgers' leadership comes into question.
Aaron Rodgers was phenomenal last night. That comeback was phenomenal. It was a great performance by him. I can't say anything negative about his performance last night. I think you make some interesting points about his leadership style, and that may be something he has to correct. Right. 1-5, the Giants have been absolute disasters so far, with Odell Beckham Jr. calling out the team in the media and Eli Manning looking older by the day. It's gotten so bad that owner John Mara threw himself into the fray yesterday, calling out Odell for talking too much and actually coming to Eli's defense.
We still believe in him, but you know, everybody needs to do their jobs in order for us to be successful. And right now, that's not happening. I know he's the punching bag right now, but a lot of guys need to play better when you're 1-5. It's not just him.
I'm the crazy person that agrees with John Mara. I'm not jumping off the Eli Manning bandwagon just yet. Their offensive line is a problem. The lack of protection is a problem. I get where John Mara is coming from. With that blocking up front, Johnny Unitas, Roger Staubach and Peyton Manning couldn't do anything.
Well, look, if Eli Manning's the punching bag, then John Mara's punch drunk, because the way that he's talking about this team, if I'm sitting there, if I'm playing well on this team, if I'm Saquon Barkley or anybody else, I'm like, we need names and numbers, coach. You need to start pointing fingers. We need to hear that from up top, owner. But if you're not, it's a smart play. I think he's already saying, I'm not going to touch the Eli Manning conversation ever again. He got burned last year when he benched Eli Manning, and the public backlash and criticism made him say, Eli is our starter once again. But I think behind closed doors, the decision has been made. Eli's going to quietly go off into the sunset. But before that, I am not touching that hornet's nest, and I'm not going to go out there and chastise Eli Manning.
Well, I agree with you, but why is the owner saying it and not the head coach? Everybody's speaking on the matter except for the guy that should be, that's the leader of the team that we haven't heard from on Eli, except for the fact that he said we still believe in Eli. A demand or something was told to him when he took the job. Like, to me, the owner doesn't have a choice but to say we believe in Eli. What else can he say? Oh, he's a bum. We need to get somebody. Who's he going to get?
Yeah.
It's too late in the season. He got to ride that wave and let Eli make his 20 whatever million dollars and ride off into the sunset. And I've always been, you know, hard on the Mannings, but Peyton Manning, I could never say it when he played, but he was much better than I ever thought. I don't think Eli is as good as
the hype
people give him credit for.
Yeah, mm-hmm. As advertised, right?
So I apologize to Peyton, but Eli is what we thought.
So when Eli retires, are you going to apologize to him too?
No.
I mean, okay, just making sure.
I mean, he's Roy Jones Jr. right now. That's who he is. He's the old Roy Jones Jr. We are still holding on to the nostalgia of him being a two-time Super Bowl MVP, but Eli Manning can't play anymore. He hasn't been able to play, really, over the past 3 or 4 years. And Odell Beckham Jr. really saved his career when he was drafted in 2014 because it sparked that offense. But when you really look at him, he's a limited passer. He can't push the ball down the field. They can't really open up the offense because the things that his playmakers around him do well, he can't do. And when you look at him, he's scared to death of the pocket. He's scared. Whenever he gets close, he falls down. And I know his brother, Peyton Manning, they did that so they didn't take hits. But for him, it's over. And everyone has tried to tell the Giants that Eli Manning can't play. Jerry Reese, Ben McAdoo, then you have the players. At some point, they got to listen to it. Everybody.
Who's worse, Bucky, honestly? And I know you watch a lot of film. Who's playing worse, the offensive line or the quarterback for the Giants?
I mean, they're all bad. The offensive line certainly has
worse?
Done him in favor. Eli Manning is worse.
Than the offensive line?
Eli Manning is worse.
Wow.
Eli Manning is worse. Eli Manning doesn't have a punch. Like, there's nothing that he does that strikes fear in the defense. And even though they're bad up front, we blamed everybody. So we got Ereck Flowers out. We put new people in front of him. We've done all the other stuff. At some point, we got to look at number 10.
Yeah, and you know what? To his brother's credit, when we used to face the Colts, and many a times, I mean, Tariq Glenn aside, they didn't have great guys up front. But you know who was the best offensive lineman there? Peyton Manning.
Peyton Manning.
And his smarts and his arm and getting rid of the ball. You have your best pass rush move. Ah! Peyton Manning's like, no, that didn't work. And he was just smart enough to manipulate the defense. Eli's even lost that trait. But beyond the physical issues that he has now, he can't push the ball down the field. He can't strike fear. He can't throw it outside the numbers. You can't even manipulate the defense anymore because you're not smart enough or you're not courageous enough in the pocket to just get rid of it.
The word you just said, and Bucky alluded to it earlier, courageous. He's afraid. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to – it goes back to what I said about Dan Marino a long time ago. Dan, at about 44, said, I could still throw the ball with anybody in the league. I just don't want to get hit. Eli has to come to the place where he realizes that it's over. And – he doesn't want to take a hit. He's never been the toughest guy, and he's invented the hook slide. He throw the ball with his back turned and would complete some of them, but he's never been courageous in the pocket, and it's starting to show.
Bottom line, I think what y'all are saying, and I'm not even going to disagree anymore, is just like there's so much money to be made by playing. He that's the why he's out there.
Right.
It's about the $20 million he's collecting. If it were back in your day, he would have walked away if he's getting paid $2 million or whatever. But at $20 million, and they're gonna let you keep sitting out there collecting that check?
I don't think it's just money with him. I think that legacy matters. I think protecting
that legacy. He's tarnishing his legacy.
Well, protected in the sense that he's a Manning. Beyond two-time Super Bowl MVP and I'm heralded as a New York Giant, I'm also a Manning. Like, they don't want to let that go, because once he lets it go, what's next in terms of that? So there's a little bit of that brotherly pressure, that family pressure that keeps him going back out there, because obviously his heart and his spirit is not being
I'm honest. Not a Hall of Fame voter, but I'm in the media. He's hurting his Hall of Fame legacy. Definitely. With the way this is ending.
I don't think he could hurt his legacy, because those two Super Bowl championships in New York and the numbers that he put up.
Looks like he got carried there. All right, let's move to the NBA. And we're joined now by NBA champion Steven Jackson, who slandered me yesterday on
yes!
Twitter.
For the culture.
We're going to get into that on Instagram. We're going to get into that shortly. But all right, let's move to the NBA, where the regular season tipped off last night with a showdown between two of the East's exciting young teams, the Celtics and the Sixers. Boston was clearly the better team, pulling away to win by 18, even with an off night from Kyrie Irving. Afterwards, Charles Barkley actually said the Celtics have more talent than the Warriors, but he still wasn't convinced they could take down the champs.
What's to keep Golden State from another title? Let's put it that way, Chuck.
Injuries, hurricanes, tornadoes, snowstorms, man-made, some man-made, Chernobyl.
Does anybody know what a tornado is?
that Auburn.
That Auburn.
Auburn.
Look. I think I listened to Charles last night, and he actually went on to say that he thinks Boston's talent is going to be an issue for the Celtics. He thinks that too many minutes to manage for Brad Stevens. I disagree. What I saw from Boston last night is a team that I believe, what Charles said, is just as talented in a different way than Boston, and is going to be if Boston makes it to the finals, which I think they will, I think there'll be a real problem for the Golden State Warriors.
I think they're going to be a tough out. I think he's right. I think in terms of just talent in a vacuum, they're I would say more talented. They're just redundant and excessive at a time. So when there's only one ball, we always hear that cliche, what comes into play is you can have a lot of talent. There's a minimum threshold. But then after that, is all that necessary? Because if you can't manage the egos, you can't manage the personalities, everyone who's walking in has a chip on their shoulder. Kyrie heard trade talks every day he was out last year. Gordon Hayward's trying to prove I'm back. You got a lot of Jason Tatum's like, I've been working out with Kobe. I am not trying to hear that I get limited time. There's a lot to manage with all that excess talent. And I'm with Barkley. I think they're more talented, but they still come up short.
Definitely more talented team. I think this is the only team in the NBA that has 10 guys on the roster that could start on any other team. They're that deep. And I think what separates them and why we don't have to worry about guys worrying about shots or guys worrying about getting their numbers, the coach does a great job of making everybody feel confident and a great job of making everybody feel like they're the number one player. Like, even last night, you see Kyrie didn't get going. He didn't get frustrated. He started giving the ball to Jason Tatum and other guys because he understands that he's not going to be the star player every night. And you got to credit Brad Stevens for giving all those guys confidence, even the guys that's coming off the bench to play like starters, and that's why they had success last year.
Yeah, but the problem is adversity. It's great when we win by 18.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you made me feel like the man. Oh, we did it all in a winning fashion for a winning situation. When we hit that wall, when we lost 2 of 3 or something, then everybody's like, we don't want to hear that I'm the man if I can't go out there and have impact and make this game a success. So what's going to happen when they hit that wall of adversity, which every team faces?
Well, I think they went through it last year when guys went down. You know, first game of the season, they went through it. With Gordon Hayward going down, they had to figure that out the rest of the season. Then Kyrie go down.
But that's
they had to figure it out.
Because then two of the stars leave. Now you have a void to fill. What if everyone's there? We're already maxed out, and we're losing in that capacity.
That's not going to happen in the East.
You don't think?
Brad Stevens is too good. Yep. Boston's too talented. Look, Barkley's narrative that there could be some time management issues, I think is false, because I think this group for this year is going to be 1,000% bought in. They have a chance to do something very special. I think they're the one team that's going to take the regular season very seriously. And then when they get into the postseason, it's going to be all about making history and taking down this team that's going for a three-peat. I just don't see the egos being a problem. Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown, the story's out on them. Regardless of what their numbers look like, people know these dudes can play.
Right.
And they will get paid when it's their time to get paid. I just don't see the egos being an adversity issue
for the Celtics?
I don't either, and they're playing for each other. And, you know, people talk about what Jason Tatum feels like is his team. I can tell you right now, Kyrie and Jason Tatum have a great relationship.
Right.
He wouldn't want another person to shine more than Jason Tatum. But I honestly think Gordon Hayward's going to be the odd man out. Because if you see, the first sub that came out of the game was Gordon Hayward. The start of the lineup was Rozier at the one, Kyrie at the two, Tatum, Brown, and Horford. I think they're going to finish a lot of games like that.
Maybe that's just because it's his first game back and, you know, you're on that pitch count, something like that. But I will say this. I don't think it's the ego issue, but watch for this. Only Kyrie's been to the finals, so everyone's saying we're going to mellow him into the finals, but you only have one guy with experience on that level. That may be the reason they really come up short.
All right, to another team that's had everyone talking this offseason, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who start their season tonight against the Spurs. After some recent dramatics from disgruntled Jimmy Butler, the team's owner, Glenn Taylor, just confirmed he is working on a trade to move Butler and that the All-Star has agreed to play until the deal is done. Last night, T-Wolves legend Kevin Garnett said he feels Butler's pain.
Totally understand him. I totally get it. And he's dealing with Glenn, who doesn't know about basketball.
Glenn
probably
Taylor.
A great,
yeah.
Probably
well,
is
I think we weren't concerned about the Taylor part.
I know. he knows how to make money, but he don't know anything about basketball.
I kind of agree with Kevin Garnett here. Until the owner's got a naive approach that someone that knows the marriage is ending or someone that knows, you know what, I got this new job and I'm just a short-time employee here. That's an employee I don't really want to deal with. I know Jimmy Butler's going to play hard and all that, but I don't want to deal with short-time employees. I know when I've given my two-week notice, it might as well have been a day one notice because for the next 2 weeks, I'm mentally checked out.
Yeah, your head's in the parking lot already, right? You're still at practice. I get it. I think Jimmy Butler, look, there's no I in team, but there is a me. And every time you step into a team concept, a team framework, you always still are thinking about yourself. You think about your contract terms. You think about your opportunities, your touches, whatever it may be. So now he has narrowed his focus to saying, I'm caring about Jimmy Butler, and I'm going to give y'all tough love. And as my coaches always say, tough love, I'm going to keep it 100 with you because either you're going to hate me or it's going to motivate you. Simply put. And I think that he's going to go in there and he doesn't care how they take it because he's not caring how tomorrow looks for these guys. But I think he's still going to do Jimmy Butler to the 100 degree.
Well, I talked to him and it seemed like you talked to him because that's exactly what he said. I'm going out there and play. I'm going to be a professional. I'm going to go out there and try to win games. And if I get traded, then that's what happens. But I'm going to be a professional. And I like what KG said because it's probably not that owner. It's a whole bunch of owners that don't know nothing about basketball. Hell, it's some coaches that play baseball. Now, they NBA coaches. So some of the coaches don't know about basketball. So I understand that totally. But Jimmy, he's in a tough situation. But at the end of the day, he just want to win. And I understand that.
Okay, you've talked to Jimmy. But how's he going to handle this situation? He's already explained to everybody that he thinks, you know, Cat needs to grow up. Andrew Wiggins ain't tough. And so when he starts seeing signs of this during games, is he going to check these guys because he's a short-term employee and he did it to them in practice? Mm-hmm. Is he going to check them in the game, on the court? That, to me, where the real problems could creep into this team, that could be an issue.
Well, he's done that. And even the owner questioned Wiggins before he gave him the contract out of the media.
We need a meeting.
We need to know you're really with us. So you can't blame Jimmy if the owners are doing it. But at the end of the day, he's going to check him because his passion for the game. He's going to, when they do something wrong and they're not playing well, he's going to get into it with them. So that's why they need to move him so it won't be an issue.
Not everybody can handle getting checked publicly.
Right.
Yeah.
You can, and again, this is why I think the owner's being naive and maybe even the coach in terms of you start checking Andrew Wiggins, and let's say he's as soft as everybody says he is. Let's say that he actually did call his brother and say, you know what? I ain't got no heart, so I better not sequester Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Remember somebody did that over
Instagram? Somebody I know right here.
There's an Instagram assassin out there.
He is lethal.
But again, you could stunt Wiggins' growth by leaving him here with Jimmy Butler, who may just play too rough.
Yeah, but just imagine Jimmy at his best and Wiggins at his best with Cat on that team.
Mm-hmm.
They can make a lot of noise in the West, and I think a lot of people see that. I even think Tibbs see it. But they got to go out there and do it. We can talk about it till we black and blue in the face, but if Wiggins don't get no heart, if he don't go out there and play harder, if he don't reach his potential, which we all know he has, top draft pick,
He's super athletic, right. Has every skill in the book. He just got to get it out of him. If you can't get it out of him, then it's kind of hard to respect him.
I respect the owner for saying, hey, I tried. I had a meeting with Wiggins. I tried to get this same conversation going. Now I'm going to let you be my enforcer, Jimmy Butler. Not by design, but that's just the circumstance. So, look, it's a little Jedi mind trick going on right here. He's like, because I believe every single player that makes it has a dog in them. Now, there are different types of dogs. There's a dog that sits there and barks and is not going to bite. There's a dog that's going to lay there and say, do what you want to do, and soon you think you got away, oh, I'm in you. Yep. And there's all types. And maybe Jimmy Butler and the way he's going to approach them with the tough love is going to get whatever type of dog that Wiggins has in him is finally going to come out. Maybe it's more bark. Maybe it's a little more bite than we've seen.
Any chance, Steve, and we'll end on this. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks into this, the Timberwolves are 6-1 or something, 3 weeks into it, and looking, any chance this works out and Jimmy Butler actually stays in Minnesota?
That's why I say, tell people all the time, you're one of the smartest people I know. 6-1, they'll think about it. They'll think about making it work because they're winning. Well, winning fixes winning fixes everything. Winning fixes everything. Because at the end of the day, he's going to get paid regardless.
All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Doug Gottlieb, Brian Cox, and TJ Houshmandzadeh. They're all back. Let's move to Kansas City and my Kansas City Chiefs, who have been lighting up the league with superstar quarterback Patrick Mahomes under center. But now NFL.com actually has the audacity to say Mahomes isn't even the most dominant quarterback in his division, claiming that the honor should go to old man Rivers, that's Philip Rivers, who has been having a stellar year himself. I think they're going a bit too far saying Philip Rivers is having a better year than Patrick Mahomes. But what I will agree with them on, or I'll take it this next level, I think the Los Angeles Chargers are a real threat to the Kansas City Chiefs. They're 4-2, playing really well, and there's no Joey Bosa. And once they add Joey Bosa, and that's a guy, you know, for a young guy, one of the most dominant young defensive players I've ever seen. I think the Chargers are for real. And they got great weapons around Philip Rivers when they actually catch the ball. I've seen them drop some balls. But I think their defense is good. I think Philip Rivers is having a career year. They could be a real problem for the Chiefs.
I completely agree. They're playing this well without their best player and, frankly, without Hunter Henry, who they felt like's their second-best pass catcher. And he may, because he tore his ACL so early in the offseason, he may actually be back come playoff time. May. And if that happens, now all of a sudden, I don't know how you stop them. They've been playing with backups on the offensive line, and they dominated a pretty good defensive line for the Cleveland Browns this past weekend. They have a ton of talent. What happens is people conflate two stories. They conflate the story of the Chargers struggling to sell PSLs and having road games at home with the Chargers not being a good football team. They're a very good football team that unfortunately is caught up in this mess of playing in the wrong stadium and probably in the wrong city. But I agree with you. And then I think the other point is that Philip Rivers, though being an old man, he has so many more credit hours, the thought is that Mahomes will make the big mistake.
I still think this division is Kansas City's to lose because Kansas City is not the same old Kansas City offensively. Now, defensively, they still have some work to do. But the Chargers were one of my three Super Bowl picks coming out the AFC, so I'm
three?
Happy to see them. Yeah, I had them.
One of my seven picks on the AFC.
No, I had them.
You're like a 15-bracket guy in the NCAA tournament.
Well, I'm not as secure with New England as normally I would be. And then I thought the Houston Texans would come on, but the Chargers are doing a really good job. And if you remember, they started slow last year, got on a hot streak, won 9 straight games. Kim Wisenhunt and this offense is doing a great job. But I do think Kansas City holds on.
That's a tough question. That's a toss-up. Phillip Rivers' Lifetime Achievement Award, that's why they have him ranked higher than Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes hasn't done it enough. But until somebody can slow down Kansas City, their defense is terrible. They'll get Eric Berry back, who is their best defensive player. He's going to shore some things up. You can't stop Kansas City. You can't stop them. And it's, yeah, defense wins championships. They're consistently putting up 35 points. It doesn't matter who they're going on everybody. So if San Diego can keep pace and stay with us, then let's go.
Here, look, and I love the Chiefs. I got a bias. But here's the issue. I think it's hard to stop any good offense in the NFL right now. The rules are so rigged against defenses that it's hard for anybody to stop anybody. And so then it comes down to, do you have a player who can turn a game with a turnover or create several third and long situations. And when Joey Bosa shows back up, he's better than any defensive player the Kansas City Chiefs have by far as a disruptor, turnover creator, long yardage situation creator. That's what to me gives, hold on, Doug, that's what to me gives Kansas City, I mean San Diego, maybe an advantage over the Chiefs.
But Houston was held out last week, you know, the linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, as well as Dee Ford was coming back off injury. Those two guys in combination, they don't match Ingram and Joey Bosa, but they're an accomplished group of guys that can go and get the quarterback as well.
And then they have Derwin James, who's playing at a Pro Bowl level, and he's only played five games. Like, look, the Chargers have dudes. They have
the Chargers,
dudes.
And Keenan Allen is one of the most underrated receivers in the league.
Right, yes. And then when you combine that with the experience, I don't think it's a lifetime achievement award, but it's also the fact that what we've seen from the NFL rules, not only can you not touch wide receivers, but immobile quarterbacks that just stand there.
In the pocket.
You can't touch them. Okay, and one of the things that Mahomes has is he's a very good athlete. He's great within the pocket, but he's great out of the pocket. I think once you get to the playoffs, I still think they're going to protect the quarterback, but everything else is going to get much more physical. Let's go to the NLCS.
Okay.
Clayton Kershaw, who's now low 90s Clayton Kershaw, using Uncle Charlie and striking out, he struck out eight yesterday?
Right,
nine.
Nine.
Nine?
Yeah. Seven innings, nine punches,
baby. That exercising the demons? Can we now no longer call him Clayton Manning?
I heard y'all talking about that earlier, man. That's bad. Eli can still throw it a little bit, man.
I meant more Peyton because Peyton was bad in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Hey, well, here's the thing, man. I think Clayton Kershaw is and always will be, as long as he's the Los Angeles Dodgers, the face of the franchise. And you expect your face of the franchise to be able to go and perform in huge situations like this. He had struggled there in game one, right? Came back and had two great starts back-to-back, giving Dodger fans all they need to know about him and his postseason career, man. Since he entered the league in 2008, he has been one of the most dominant pitchers that we have ever seen in this game.
Except in the playoffs.
Well, I think he's rewriting that history, right? I mean, we can't just bang on him because he had a few bad starts. If he changes that narrative, then we have to change our narrative as well.
I think that's completely accurate. You have to understand this series to understand how big that start was yesterday.
Huge.
Remember, 13 innings the night before, bullpens are
early
shot.
Game the next day.
And you play it to 2 o'clock, and he got lit up by this exact same lineup in game one, mm-hmm. that he had, I think, privately complained he didn't start in game one against Atlanta and pitch a gem in game two. So to go out there, pick up the ball, and not just pitch well, but to pitch well for 98 pitches,
yeah.
get through seven and yeah. striking them out so that your fielders who had let you down couldn't let you down, that was a huge start. It is rewriting some of the narrative.
Listen, Nick, I'm going to judge you as a man based okay. on how you answer
oh,
this next
please.
Question. The glasses are bad enough, so there's a lot
come
of pressure
on, man. I look
on you
smart
right
today. You
makes
know what I'm saying?
Of pressure.
I saw Steven Jackson wearing his, man. I thought I'd pull mine
right,
out
so
too, you know?
The wussification of sports continues as some people are saying, Manny Machado, oh, my God, he kicked someone's leg right across first base. Right. We're going to fine him and all this other stuff. So there's a question, has Manny Machado hurt his reputation at all this postseason?
I don't think so.
Oh, good.
I don't feel like he has completely hurt his reputation. Yeah. Now, here's my thing. I guess if you don't like the villain, then I guess you might not like Manny Machado. He even came out and publicly stated, hey, I'm not that type of guy that's going to be diving into first base. I'm not going to be the guy
not my cup of tea. That's
right, yeah, not my cup of tea. So here's my thing. I played with a player who was very similar to that in Robinson Cano. And sometimes these guys that play at that upper 1%, that none of us ever even realize how easy the game is. For these guys, they can make that game look easier. Now, the play at first base, that was noticeable. Those are the things that can put you on the radar of people that aren't even baseball
fans. Bothered you?
I think it caught me off guard. I did not expect him to do something like that in that big of a situation. 99% of ground balls to the shortstop in the big leagues get caught and you're out. That was a hard
nothing.
Ground ball.
It was nothing.
It was nothing.
I really question those glasses now.
You think so?
Nothing, yeah.
You think I should go without them, man?
Go without the glasses.
No, I don't think we think.
All right, thank you, Nick. All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Doug Gottlieb sitting in for Marcellus Wiley. We're rejoined by NBA champion Steven Jackson. Let's talk some hoops, which could be facing a big shakeup with the NBA's G League announcing it will offer select one-year contracts worth $125,000 to elite high school basketball prospects who want to skip a one-and-done year in college and go right to the pros. I think college basketball should be worried about this. This, to me, is going to entice a lot of the elite players. I think $125,000 and maybe they should pump it up to about 200,000 or eventually over time. I think this could be the end or make college basketball in their amateurism scam. To me, the NBA and the college basketball world should be working in conjunction together. I don't understand why they're not paying the college players this money while they're in college. Play the elite players this money while they're in college rather than, but I get it, the NBA wants to move everything to the G League, but I think this could shake up the college basketball
world. Well, I mean, like, look, you want to get in the back and forth about the college system, that's one thing. In regards to announcing that the G League's pumping up, there's a lot of unknowns. We don't know how many elite prospects. I do think
if it's 10, that's
it could
hurt.
It would be very damaging. You take the top 10 high school prospects a year and probably all 10 don't go. But if you get 10 of the top 20, that does a ton of damage. But what does it do to college? Now, do you have to stay in college 3 years? There's a lot we don't know. I do know we can have a moment of silence for the death of the JBA.
Thank you. I'm in.
It is over. From a first year where no one really watched and some dudes didn't get paid and level of basketball wasn't great to now the NBA going, yeah, that's over. Let's stop fooling around.
I don't even know if it ever was a thing, though. Who played in that league? Me and who else?
Well, I have to say, it's been getting a lot of traction. I've even seen highlights. People have been posting highlights of guys playing in the league. But I agree with you.
Going by highlights on Twitter.
Yeah, well, they're not getting no TV coverage. They're not getting TV coverage. Right. But you see people posting, especially Ball, the Sun, you see people posting his highlights and stuff like that. But I totally agree with you. It's nothing but to destroy the JBA. That's the only reason they're doing this.
I don't think that's why they did it. I think they did it because...
Listen.
The NBA has kind of quietly actually copied the college model from this perspective. All of these teams are opening brand new facilities. Unbelievable. Celtics, Wizards, Lakers, Clippers are going to build a new
76ers.
One. 76ers. And new ones. And what they're doing is they're incorporating their G League because the G League is not particularly well coached, not incredibly well funded, and if you're not practicing on site, you're not practicing under the watchful eye of the general managers or practicing against NBA players. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a smart plan for high school players because you're not playing real NBA basketball and you're not getting the level of attention to detail on how to develop 18, 19-year-old kids the way you would get in college. And I think you have a much more sustainable being if you go to college. But I agree with you, Jason. It's going to do damage to the college system if you take 10 or 15 or however many prospects off the top. I don't think they all go. And I think some of this is a red herring. You could always go straight out of high school. You could always sell your likeness. Your likeness doesn't have any value unless you play in college.
Play for Duke or
Kansas. Play for Duke or Kentucky.
Let me ask you all this question. Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN had an interesting tweet. A top high school player would be wiser to take a year away with a trainer prior to entering the draft than wander into the G League with far more developed men. Most pre-college teens will be overwhelmed there. Wouldn't be a pre-draft showcase. Still, it's an alternative word. He overwhelmed in the G League, the top high school players?
If we talk about, his name is 94 Feet. He was assistant coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm not sure where he coaches now. I think he's coaching in Orlando or Toronto. But he was with Cleveland with LeBron. If that type of coach is training you, that's different. But you're not going to get ready for these leagues with these soccer coaches that's all of a sudden turned basketball trainers that a lot of these guys working out with. It was footage on Instagram where they're showing guys putting up a whole bunch of chairs around guys. Those type of trainers, they're not going to get you better. But if you're dealing with guys that are actually connected to the NBA that really know the game or that was previous coaches, that might work. But just hiring a trainer, I don't think that's going to be good
enough. Look, you're speaking of two guys that played in the minor leagues. This guy made it and became an NBA champion. I did not. I can tell you it you're going to get your ass kicked. Okay,
because you're in the G League.
In the G League. Okay,
yes.
Because they're men, because they know how to play,
and they're hungry.
But I also think it's a terrible environment for the future of basketball. Because when you're in the G League, the one thing you know about any minor league is that no one really wants to be there.
Right.
From the general manager to the coach, the assistant coach, they're all and every bus trip, every plane flight, it's all about the league, the league, the league, the league. And the thing that makes great basketball great is about the team, and you only learn that when you play in college. It's about something bigger than you. Plenty of chance to be an individual, and I don't think it fosters a great growth environment.
And it's only one guy like the Lakers signed Ingram that's in the D League that's going to stand there that long to get to the NBA. Everybody else is not thinking that. They're not planning on staying there 20 years to get to the NBA.
All right, some NBA teams tipped off their regular seasons last night, including the Houston Rockets, who got blown out by New Orleans. A lot was made about the Rockets adding Carmelo Anthony this summer, but the experiment isn't off to a great start, with Melo putting up just 9 points on 3 of 10 shooting and saying that coming off the bench is, quote, challenging mentally. This is not going to work. This will not end well. Melo's in great shape. He looks slim, but he's still Carmelo Anthony, and he had a plus-minus, a minus 20 last night. It makes no sense. The ultimate ball stopper going to go play in Houston, it makes no sense. I don't like it.
Hey, the good news is he's playing for a coach he has immense amount of respect for and has great history with. Oh, wait, it's Mike D'Antoni. They hate each other. He's a very good post-up player, mid-range guy. That works in Houston's system, right? Oh, wait, it doesn't.
Right.
This one's got... He's washed, especially the way you play in the NBA, where you're switching defenses, you attack the weak link. You can't play him at
you
the
You made court. An interesting point. The league has changed.
Yes.
And it's moved away from Carmelo Anthony. If it were this league right now, when he entered as a rookie, he may have never been a superstar.
Well, I disagree. But I look at it like this, too, with Houston. He's more of there for the playoffs. When those three balls are not falling and their style is not falling, when you need to drop it to somebody to get a bucket, I think that's what he's there for. But losing Ariza.
How you beat the Warriors with that, though?
When the game slows down.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Warriors.
The game
went
slows
to
down. Playoffs slow down. The game slow down.
They went to Durant some in the post. Yeah. I think that's, again, that's the philosophy. That's the theory. In practice, it's a lot harder. You got to get to that point, not lose him. I think that's why they picked up Joe Johnson. They just never tried Joe Johnson last year.
But losing Ariza is killing him.
Yes.
Ariza had 21, 6, and 5 last night in Phoenix. They need him.
And guard.
PJ Tucker, by himself, he can't stop the best player on the other team. You need the collective effort of Ariza and Tucker. Losing Ariza was big for them.
If they get healthy, I believe Oklahoma City is the second best team in the West. And I also think that one thing that we learned last night was not about the Rockets. It's about Anthony Davis. He came out and said, like, hey, I'm right there. I'm the best player in the league. And last night he played like it. They've had a couple years where their team hasn't been healthy. If they're healthy, that's a dangerous team.
And you look at New Orleans. New Orleans pounded them inside. All three of their big guys had 20-plus. They pounded them inside, pounded them.
Let me ask y'all this. The Rockets have Carmelo in a very favorable situation. They can let him go, won't cost them any money. Do you think Carmelo survives this entire season in Houston? Obviously, you think so because you think he's going to be a force in the playoffs.
I think he's going to survive because he's going to help him in the playoffs. But just you on this show, 10,000 days, 10,000 shows in a row. Then they put you on another show. It's going to be different that first day. It's the first game for him. I think he'll fall into it, but I got to continue to say this. Losing Ariza is going to hurt them.
Yeah, and they gained Carmelo Anthony. It's subtraction
you
by
think he survives.
I think he makes it to the playoffs, but again, I think it ultimately hurts them in the playoffs.
He's better than a lot of people in the league still.
Yes, but again, if Carmelo was to accept the role and go like, hey, man, I come off the bench, that means I'm playing against second team guys.
It's mentally challenging.
Correct.
He's unsaid first night.
It's the Allen Iverson. I don't know any MVP that comes off the bench. If he would have came off the bench, he would have played in the league for 5 or 6 more years. I agree with you, right? So do I think it works? No. Do I think he lasts the season? Probably, because this is Chris Paul's guy, Chris Paul's personal project, and Chris Paul is probably like, hey, I got it. Don't worry about it. But we all know how this will end. It'll end poorly. It always ends poorly.
Melo's not smart enough to do what Vince Carter's done. Look at all the money Vince
Carter. He's never had a guy like Chris Paul. Chris Paul is a good leader. I think Chris Paul can keep it together.
All right, welcome back to the show. Doug Gottlieb is sitting in for Marcellus Wiley. Doug, I don't know if you know this, but I hate social media.
More.
Have you seen my Twitter off?
I have.
Don't make me hit you with the Twitter off. All right, Darnell Smith, our social media manager, is here, Doug, to help me understand and learn to love social media. Not going to happen. Best and worst of social media. Darnell, what do you got today?
We're going to start off with your favorite player, OBJ, who recently had an interview with Uninterrupted. They posted a video on their Instagram, and you'll be surprised who he compared themselves to. Take a listen.
I'm trying my very best to be like LeBron, to be a LeBron in my own way. But we're not the same, you know? We're not the same. But to see the way that he carries himself, like, that's what I want. That's what I'm reaching for, is a legacy, you know, outside the field, but more so on the field. Like, I'm trying to achieve some things and be a part of some things that are special.
All right, should OBJ model himself after LeBron?
Step one, cut the hair, and get a real hairstyle. Well, hell, I don't know if that's step one. LeBron's gone crazy with his hair up top, too. I get step two, put some bass. Turn the bass up and turn the bass up.
It's too light for you.
Yeah, it's just I need a little more bass than that. But yeah, OBJ is not going to be LeBron James and thought of as LeBron James anyway. LeBron James doesn't throw his head up against nets and all the other theatrics. Good luck with it. It's a good goal. It's a good life goal, but I don't see him getting there.
What was it from Austin Powers? I want a solid gold toilet, but it's just not in the cards, right? I mean, everybody has goals out there. I do. Look, I understand the nuance to what he's saying. I think he's like, I want to. I want to not laugh at him.
Yeah.
But I also think that OBJ, in whatever he's done to shun the friends that had him in that hotel room like 5 months ago with the girl and
the
what
drugs,
looked like,
yeah.
what looked like coke.
Drugs, yeah.
He apparently has no friends left, because if you had a friend, they would go like, shh, shh, shh.
Just play the game.
Just play. Play, score touchdowns, be awesome, win games, get to the playoffs, and then maybe we can start talking about you with the great receivers of all time.
All right, what's next, Darnell?
Yeah, moving on to LeBron's new teammate, Lonzo Ball, who dropped a commercial promoting the new ZO2 Big Baller brand shoes.
Ballin'!
Twitter is buzzing not only about the commercial, which pays tribute to the classic Spike Lee Michael Jordan ad, but they're also applying the fact that these new shoes are going to sell for a discounted price of only $200, a big markdown from the $500 price that the original ZO2s had.
Those are some ugly kicks. Like, what is the color scheme there?
Steph Curry is cackling and rolling a blunt looking at them shoes, and Steph had them nurses' shoes he was trying to sell at one point. Now this dude done cut his shoes half price, and they still the most expensive shoes on the market.
You ain't gonna buy a pair of Whitlock?
Nah, I'm not gonna buy a Big Baller shoes.
Man.
When they get down to about $125, I may take a look.
$200 for a dude who's coming off the bench? Like, who's,
that's true.
Who's buying the, who goes, hey, Mom, I want to be like, no, the starting point guard of the Lakers. No, not Rondo, Lonzo. Like, he ain't a starting point guard anymore. Look, I thought the ad was clever, although copying Nike when you're not Nike, that one comes off as hack. And then the shoes are just, they're ugly. There's no other way around it. Those are not shoes. And I love shoes. And I own hundreds of them. And it's a constant fight with my wife to get those shoes. But those are ugly. It looked like he stepped on a bunch of
paint colors. Let me tell you something. When they do a remake of the TV show Lost, it's going to feature LeVar and Lonzo Ball.